I think seeing it once is enough. All right. Pascal, if you want to take over and put a bit more flesh on what was sort of just giving you a taste of DRM Plus in Paris in July. Okay.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so I will try my best to give you a global overview of what's going on in France. I will say a global and not take a lot of time because, you know, it's a long story. Anyway, what is the facts today? So for digital radio in France, the facts are that the government chose band 3 and L band for Eureka 147 family of standards and bands below 30 megahertz for long wave, medium wave and short wave bands. So this is a fact. So this is not in the law, but it's a kind of law chosen by the government. This is a fact. And another fact is that what we would put inside in terms of technology for digital radio in band 3 and L bands. So the choice was TDMB. So it's similar to DAB or DAB Plus, but anyway, it's TDMB. It's not DAB Plus. I will come back after, which is it's not a technical problem. And for bands below 30 megahertz, the choice is DRM. So this is the facts today. Now, to go forward to digital, to have a national rollout of digital radio. The regulation body has the power for that. We need to have what we call the call for frequencies from the CSA for the broadcaster now to go or not to digital to some countries. So today, the CSA made one call frequencies for, first of all, 19 towns. And the result was three towns for the beginning. So Paris, Marseille, and Nice. For TDMB. There is no plan for a call frequency for DRM, not today. Again, this is a fact. It's not because it's inside the law that you're allowed to do it. You have to wait for the CSA call for frequencies to go to DRM. So today, the French would like to go to DMB. The planning we have today is not very clear because again, the problem is not technical. We have a lot of political, economical issues. We have a lot of different radio stations. So just to give you an overview, we have five types of radio broadcasters in France called A, B, C, D, and E. So E is the general broadcasters with a nationwide, so the Europe 1, RTL radios. You've got D, it's private commercial broadcasters, nationwide coverage. You've got C, again, it's national private broadcasters, but for local broadcasting in certain regions. You've got B, it's a private broadcasters, but in a very local, so region or department. And you've got A, and A, it's non-profitable radio broadcasters, this is associations. And SNRL is one syndicate, which represents, you know, a certain number of radios in category A. And of course, they don't have the same interest in terms of coverage, in terms of money, and in terms of contents. So in fact, you've got a kind of a war or a fight between two kind of categories, commercial broadcasters, TDMB, national coverage, and local broadcasters. They're not very happy with TDMB. So they are looking for alternatives. And SNRL is one syndicate, and they will push, you know, the government, the CSA, and all, I would say, the landscape in France to choose anything else than TDMB for category A local broadcasters. But the fact is that we have to start with TDMB first. The plan is to start in mid-2010. We don't have a clear, I will say, a plan for the national-wide coverage. I would say the 5 or 7 years plan. But anyway, today the CSA and all the broadcasters agree to go to digital, to go now, as soon as possible. It's possible mid-2010 with TDMB, starting with three towns, and to have a plan for the other, for the whole coverage. The target is to have 85% of coverage in France of the population. So this is a fact. Now for DRM. So for DRM, the CSA, they made a kind of public survey for the broadcasters. It was in summer. So we just received the report. And you still have some radios very interested in DRM, particularly radios part of the SNRR. They've made a lot of tests in Brittany with some radio stations. We've made some tests in Band 1, DRM Plus. Why not Band 2? Because Band 2 in Paris, it's impossible because we don't have any space to make it. But they would like to make tests in Paris because Paris is a key point for everybody. So just to say that there is an alternative today for local radios, and DRM Plus could be a very good alternative. So the next step for Mr. Boutrin, who is chairman of this big syndicate, is to push the CSA and the government to change the law. Why not inserting DAP Plus instead of TDMB? Why not inserting DRM Plus for Band 1 and Band 2? And the CSA decided, I would say, at the beginning of this week, to start four groups, working groups. One group is in charge of why not DRM Plus and why not DAP Plus. This is a fact today. DRM Plus in Band 1, it was the first step. Second step, just for information, we will start in Brittany, where I'm living, a DRM Plus trial in Band 2, 107.7 megahertz, and maybe with German colleagues in order to make a good trial, you know, for DRM Plus, but in Band 2 now. Again, with the CNRL and other local radios in Brittany. Again, is to make a kind of lobby to the government, to the CSA, that DRM Plus could be a good alternative for local radios to go to digital. So terrestrial radio, everybody agreed to go to digital from now, everybody, A, B, C, D, and E. They want to start with TDMB first, and they want to consider and to put in the law DRM Plus and DAB Plus for the next steps. And the next step will be to have a kind of calendar for the next 5 or 7 years to have a global coverage of the national, at the national wide coverage. So this is a fact today. So I cannot talk on behalf of Mr. Boutrin because Mr. Boutrin is a lobbyist, so he's acting as a lobbyist. So I cannot talk on behalf of him, but he's very active and he wants to be, you know, to have a solution for their broadcasters. This is today is a fact. So it's just a global view. It's not easy. And again, they don't have the same interests because the big radios, they don't want to have newcomers. So they prefer to have a technology where it's impossible to have newcomers. And those ones, they would like to have diversity to put their radio inside. So DAP Plus or DRM Plus could be a very good alternative. And next step will be to make a trial in FM band in Brittany. And in February next year, we will have to make conclusion for the four work groups in order to make the right decision. That's it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pascal. As you see, this is a global French view. Yeah. So if you have questions, I'm... also, at the same time, trying to introduce Mr. Michel Penrouge. He's a chair of our commercial committee, also from TDF France. So we have here a very strong French contingent. So if you have questions on the French experience, French discussions, we have very good representation. I think with this, we are going beyond the technology. So there are so many other issues, as you can see. It's about who's operating in the market, what the interests are. And I think that's a very interesting point of view. Anyone have a question for Pascal and Michelle, maybe. Yes, please go ahead.
Hi, Mark Hopgood, Frontier Silicon. There's been a lot of developments in France just over the last couple of weeks, and I've been trying to follow the announcements from the CSA. And we've been doing a lot of field tests in France as well with DNB radio technology. I'm a little confused, though, because we understood that the delays in Paris, Nice, and Marseille to the summer of next year or something like that. I heard about the four working groups that have been established. But there was the symbolic launch in Paris,
yes,
of DNB radio. What's the difference between what's on air in Paris at the moment and then what is going to be the service that officially launches next summer?
It's a temporary. I would say frequency, only to make trials. Again, it's not an official launch. They want to start and to show that we can go now to digital.
Right. So does that?
This is not the final frequency. You know, it's not the final frequency.
Understood. So am I right in saying then that the next step is that the tender for the MUX operator for those three regions has got to happen next, and that might take 2 months or something like that?
Yes.
And yes. Has the licenses for the broadcasters been allocated yet or not?
No, right. Not yet. And you have a lot of big issues, you know. One issue is to build the multiplex because you have to put, you know, broadcasters inside the same multiplex. Sometimes you have conflict of interest. So it's not easy at all. So there was a plan, but again, it's just a plan. There is nothing fixed yet, as far as I'm aware. And of course, like you, I'm waiting for for that. Okay. But I would say it's almost finished. Maybe we have one representative from RFI here. Maybe he knows better things than me. If you want to add something or... No? For the multiplex.
The multiplex.
There
are two technologies. At this stage, we have DMB, of course, and the DMB has to be multiplexed with other radios. So it's always a little bit difficult to agree with every radio to have only one transmitter. For maybe 10, 8 radios, it depends. The DRM Plus has the advantage to be to have your own transmitter. So it's very simple to continue as you are already an FM station. You just have to put a new transmitter, of course, and you transmit as you always have been done. The DMB has a disadvantage that you need to be multiplexed with 8 to 10 radios. So this is, I think, a big advantage for the DRM Plus.
Yes, yes, it is. But again, it's complicated because, yes, you need to agree together to build your multiplex. Okay, you have to create the company. To manage a multiplex, you have to choose your multiplex operator, and after the multiplex operator, have to choose the network operator to transmit the signal. And again, I agree with you. You've got 2 months or 2 months or 2 months and 2 months. So we don't know where. She said that I want to stop to say when we will start because they don't know. Again, they have a target is to start in June 2010. Maybe with Paris, Marseille. I don't know. And maybe with a clear calendar for the next steps. This is what we hope. But again, everybody, A, B, C, D, E broadcasters, they agree to go to digital, which is a good, yeah. I would say, start. Yeah. So now everybody agreed. Now, digital terrestrial could be DAB, DAB Plus, DMB, DRM, DRM Plus. Again, but the fact is today it's only TDMB in the law. And the goal of the CNRL is to put DAB Plus and maybe DRM Plus inside and to convince people that the multi-standard receivers will happen soon. But I don't know. It's just a global overview I have. So maybe Michelle...
I would like, before taking the question from Claudia, I would like to ask Michelle to add, because he knows the situation in France probably extremely well.
Okay. So actually, the debate is on in France. We have got recently some news that seems to show that the French broadcasters are willing to go slower than anticipated. And actually, it's really a question of a strategy for the broadcasters. In France, the market is driven by the broadcasters, and the business case linked to digital radio is not clear at all for all the broadcasters. So currently, today, they say, okay, why to change? Why to go to go simulcast on FM, for instance, and on DMB? Where is the money? Where is the business? And the situation is not clear. And in addition to this, we have also those saying, that the best way is to go to the internet. It's really cost effective compared to medium wave in DRM or whatever. So it's really, I would say, the debate is on. Yesterday, the French regulatory body, the CSA, has set a new committee to schedule the launch of digital radio. So, this is very important. And also what is important is that in France, we have the government has endorsed two standards. One is DMB, the French way, which is compatible with DAB+ and so on, and DRM. But DRM in the bands below 30 megahertz, not for the time being in the FM bands. And I don't think it's going to be endorsed in the FM bands. So this is where we are. The debate is on. Digital radio is really on the run. The point is to be clear on what is the business case. So, that's it for me.
Okay. Claudio, because he's been patiently waiting for
his chance.
My
question, I don't know if Michel or Pascal will answer. We was part of the answering the CSI questionnaire as Radio Maria France, and Michel helped us also on this. And I remember one of the questions was specifically if the broadcaster was willing to use the 26 megahertz band. What is the status of these? We say yes.
I didn't read the report made by the CSA for this public survey. But what I've learned is maybe not 26 megahertz is not the right technology for local broadcasting in the lower band. They want to promote DRM plus. This is what I've read.
Yes, Michel tells DRM plus. I don't know, yes or no, but not in FM. So in band one, yes or no?
In band one first, because yes. Okay. FM bands.
And he said DRM in lower than 30, so 26.
Again, it's not down. What I gave you, this is the result of a public survey. This is not, a decision. Again, you've got two lobbies, or maybe more, local and private. They don't have the same interest. It's economically speaking. Go to digital. And again, those guys, they would like to push DRM Plus and to push other technologies for their own interest. But I don't know the final decision will be. Again, maybe the work group, they form the work groups. Maybe at the end of February, although the work groups will give the conclusion, and after the decision will make the final one. But I don't know.
I have just one comment. Band 1 may have an advantage because it can, it allows DRM Plus to be used. But Band 1 is not necessarily free in all countries. It is free in many countries. And, of course, in those countries where it is free and where our infrastructures kept, which were used to transmit TV in this band, the masts and the antennas could be reused, or the place on the mast could be reused, and this is a big advantage. But in those countries where band one is already used for other things and it is not available, 26 megahertz is available. And because it uses the existing already system, the DRM30, and it is in some places already, let's say, foreseen for use for digital in this part, it still had an advantage. It's not because in one country, like in France, for example, there is an advantage for band 1 more than 26 megahertz that there is a choice generally. Thank you.
Well, I hope that you've got a picture of how confusing the picture is in France, basically. But the one message I've taken from what Pascal said was that at least A, B, C, D, E, they are all for digital radio. So it's a matter of working through the various groups of interest and getting to a solution. Of course, we are coming back to what is the best solution. It seems that every authority, every territory seems to go for various combinations. Isn't that true? Isn't that true?
Yes. My question is a rather delicate one. Is when we talk about money, is and business case here. I know from experience that to introduce digital radio in a large country like France would cost a lot. My guess is in the order of magnitude of 1 billion euro. Maybe it's a worst case estimation. Huh? But I just wonder, from where would the money come? Is this, let's say, scheduled to be done over a number of years, or is there a fund available, or how would this be done? Or is it money from the European Commission, or... Yes, no, I just wonder. I mean, you cannot, let's say, promise complete coverage of the country with digital radio if you don't have the money to pay for it.
Yes, I agree. In fact, the government... They ordered two reports. One report is to reply to the question, is the government can somehow help to finance for digital radio rollout and maybe digital TV? First report. The response of the report is no. Maybe second report is for this category A, so non-profitable association radio stations, it was how to find the way to help them to find the funds to go to digital. So it's more positive. So in fact, you've got, stop me if I'm wrong, Michel and Olivier, so you have a kind of fund here, okay, to help today. In analog, you have the same funds to help as a radio to go to FM. Today you've got these funds. And funds are coming from tax, from the revenues of commercial radios, the hard revenues of the commercial radios. So, and as they want to do the same thing, kind of things, for digital radio, and they say that in the report, they say that we need about 10 million euros for helping the local station radios to go to digital. So first report say, no, the government will not help all the industry to go to digital. So the privates, they have to make their business model and they have to make their business plan for that. I agree, it's very expensive for national rights. And second report, positive one, to help the localization to go to digital. And the reply is yes, we have funds and we will help them. That reason why the A radio stations are happy and say, we will go to digital. Because their main concern was to the funds.
They need a
local
system.
But yes. They need a
local system. And DRM+, this is why they are also going for DRM+. It's a cheaper
They calculated from TDMB.
Solution.
Yeah? They calculated from TDMB.
Yes.
This is a message that DRM+ would be less expensive than DAB.
Yeah.
I think also, yes, yes. Well, probably because of the multiplex
again, DRM Plus
situation.
Is new for everybody, you know. you know, the final standard was in this summer.
No, the standard was passed by ETSI in
by ETSI, approved by ETSI,
1st of September. It is a new standard, but people are getting excited, and one of the things is money. It is cheaper to implement, and it doesn't need the multiplexes. And it also works, so I think we, in a presentation very soon, we'll have a bit more about how it works and where it works. So park this thought, and we will come back to DRM+. If there are no more questions, I would like to move. I would like to move the workshop a bit, the conference a bit on. And since we were, thank you very much, Pascal. Since we were talking about receivers, I think we'll come to a short presentation on receivers. It's a sore point always, and as a consortium which is not commercial, for us it is a bit difficult. We would like to convince all manufacturers that what it needs, what DRM needs, are receivers, but we as a consortium can only encourage, share information, put people together, network, offer all the facts and figures we have, but we cannot practically create the receivers ourselves. However, we've had recent successes. You see two boxes here, which Michel brought. A lot of hard work has been going on inside the consortium, led by Michel, with people like Claudio, to produce receivers. There are other receiver manufacturers who are also working on the side, others who are working and not connecting to us. But we are trying to look at this issue because it's a very chicken and egg, and even regulators and people say, oh, DRM is very good, but where are the receivers? It's a circular argument, and we can't ignore it. So I'll ask Vinita, we are, as I say, not producing receivers ourselves, to give us a few facts and a few ideas of what might be going on. Vinita.
Thank you, Ruxandra. So I'm back here again. And the subject given to me was also about DRM developments and the receiver market. So I'll begin with some general information of what's happened regarding DRMs, transmissions, broadcasts, decisions in the last year or so. So first, the three big countries which have shown serious interest in DRM. I don't know if you are aware of the Russian interest. There was a big DRM delegation in Russia recently, and Russia earlier this year decided to introduce DRM in the medium wave and short wave. And the decision number, etc., it's all in a government document. And during IBC also, we had a Russian minister present, and he gave a big discourse on the plans for digitization of Russia in general, and specifically he talked about radio and the choice of DRM, and again in a phased manner from 2009 and 2015. India I've also mentioned at length in the morning, so you already know about it. Brazil is the newest entrant in this list, but also very exciting for us right now. They decided again. There was we were there in Brazil during the Abbott conference in June, where the government announced that DRM is one of the platforms under consideration for adoption. They haven't decided which digital standard they would go for. Yep, and Michelle can probably talk about a bit more. If you have any questions, you can tell us. This is just a list of a few new broadcasts which were put on air, DRM broadcasts. This BBC and Deutsche Welle channel has been on air almost a year now. It was launched in December last year. We'll be celebrating its first year soon. It's an 18-hour daily broadcast of the best of the English programming done by BBC and Deutsche Welle. And we've had some very good feedback on this channel because otherwise BBC English is not available in Europe. Then RTP with Deutsche Welle started a DRM shortwave transmission to Central Europe in January. TDP Radio started a dance music station aimed at Asia, which was started in July 2009. And All India Radio, as I've already mentioned, started a broadcast aimed at Europe and for some local broadcast again in January. This is just a map to show where the BBC Deutsche Welle channel can be heard in parts of Europe, sorry. It's a very big coverage area. This you've already seen. This is the Indian map and the local NVIS coverage of the DRM channel in from Delhi. DRM Plus, it's already been discussed in various presentations already and will be discussed in the next presentation also, so I will not go on in any detail in this, except that it was tested in Hanover and then Paris, you've already heard, and it also that it was the system enhancement was approved by ETSI, and it included the extension up to 174 megahertz and also the introduction of MPEG surround support system. Now, come back to DRM receiver markets and how Ruxandra already mentioned the old adage about the chicken and egg story. Broadcasters say, where are the affordable receivers? And a lot of people ask these questions. But the manufacturers go back and say, where are the broadcasts? They're not in our broadcast. So we'll talk about the broadcasters first thing. With some of the broadcasters that you have just heard firming up their plans, they want to introduce DRM in a big way. They say, where are the radios? And why are they still so expensive? If you show them the radios, they say, why are they expensive? Do they have other standards on it too? Do they have FM? Do they have analog? Do they have DAB on it? If not, why not? And how is it different from my present radio set? So if I choose to not to do away with my old receiver and buy a new fancy digital receiver, how is it going to bring more value to me? So basically, I think the question is about content. Am I going to get anything new and different? So I think this is, to my mind, a very, very cheap, basic diagram, a childlike description of the three basic demands of a DRM receiver. And I think it is true for any digital receiver, if it has to be a mass market rollout internationally, I think, that it should not be expensive. It should not consume too much power. And this is also a requirement now in Europe, that there should the power consumption should not be too high. And I go back to the example of India. Receivers need to have a long battery life, really, because batteries are also expensive. And multi-standard receivers. And we have already had a discussion on multi-standard receivers, I think, before. So here are just two models of which are right now available to buy, two DRM receivers that you see. One is the UniWave, which is the newest and the funkiest model, as we know, and you can already see it outside. You can see a live reception of DRM broadcast on the UniWave receiver. It's got a color screen, and it supports Journaline. It has an SD card reader, music, videos, time shift, the works. It does everything. And its second production lot of 1,000 pieces should be available by February, is what the manufacturers tell us. Himalaya is there. It's been there for some time already. I personally think it's a very beautiful piece of radio because all nice, white, and pristine. It's a lovely photo there. Supports DRM, DAB, AM, FM, with SD card support for stereo listening. They come back to us every time. We say, why not marketing it more? Why don't you put it on the shelves? They say, where are more broadcasts? Because it costs a lot of money to market. So can you tell us where are enough broadcasts for people to go and start buying it off the shelves? And what are the contents the other broadcasters providing? So we have made the provision to display the content, or it should be heard or seen, but are they doing it? And unfortunately, not many broadcasters have really put together their mind or their content teams together to actually start thinking of exploiting the true potential of digital radio. BBC is doing some work, though. We had attended a very interesting session recently. So UniWave's response, and I quote, the market has changed. Earlier this year, the request was DRM. Now, starting in August, and depending on the area, the request is DRM and DRM Plus, or DRM with DAB Plus in Australia and Scandinavia. From Himalaya, I quote, we are motivated to evaluate many alternative solutions and plan to put that into production by confirmations in terms of technology readiness and market demand. So basically saying, give me more decisions about broadcast. We have many years of testing and perfecting the units before massive productions, and we seek to contribute in a significant way to the different rollouts all over the world. We think this kind of global cooperation is key to success for DRM, which is an international standard. This is a slide that has been given to me by Analog Devices, ADI, the big American company. They have a Blackfin processor, which you see, and they think that this can be used for internet radio and digital radio and audio player all with the same chipset, the processor. And they are definitely in the mood of doing multi-standard receivers and use the design in a variety of different products. Here's another slide of DRM receiver costs. And as you can see, it started from about $800 and coming down to $220-odd now today. And you see a projection of $85 for next year and $54 the following year. And this is based on, again, ADI making a significant announcement soon. And actually, I'm stealing the thunder from them, but with their due permission. What they're saying is, this is the second point here on the slide, is an example. They introduced the next generation radios with a very low-cost tuner by 2010. So the electronic bill of materials is less than $20. And then further lowering the cost of DSP processors by 2011, so that further bringing the price of the receiver down. But of course, what will bring the price of receivers down is firm broadcast plans and launch with a critical mass of services on air. And also, I think it is the broadcaster's responsibility to make their listeners aware of their plans. Then also, as somebody already mentioned in the in this meeting here, that local radio manufacturing can also bring the prices down. We could also think of doing various different versions of receivers which are simple and sophisticated, so that the simple receivers do not have many gizmo features in it, but still does its basic job of audio and a single screen for maybe so it's cheaper for the poor and rural masses, and a sophisticated version which is for the middle classes or upper middle classes wherever they are in the world. And then subsidies. We have, I'm sure, discussed it at different levels, and people have this idea, subsidized receivers in the market initially when the rollout happens, by whether it's the broadcaster, because it has a vested interest for people to start listening and buying or giving it away, basically, so subsidizing the manufacturer in a way. Or it could be NGOs who are working in poor or underprivileged areas of the world, like in Africa, which we haven't mentioned at all through the morning, where radios still serve a huge purpose, and a lot of international NGOs use radio for education and for information. So maybe we can somehow bring those stakeholders on the table. And people basically who still believe in the future of radio and its use for the vast masses of the world. In conclusion, as we've seen, it's very positive. The DRM technology is spreading. And there's a lot of interest in DRM. But broadcasters need to seriously, at least a few big broadcasters in some countries need to say that they are going to put the transmissions on air. These are the dates. And then tell their listeners, start talking to people so that people still have very little understanding of digital radio. Then manufacturers need to react to this demand and supply the market. So, toughen up a little bit and not be coy about getting into the market, I think. The consortium, we try and provide the forum for exchange of ideas and spreading information and are there for any help, and ready to pass on whatever we know or can give to other people. But we need support from the EBU and ABU, which we do get a lot of support, and we are here today because of that support. But I think we need it a little bit more, and maybe with some sort of a timeline. And I put my lovely childlike triangle again, a DRM receiver, which is a good price, doesn't consume too much power, and is multi-standard, is probably the way to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Vinita. And I know this is probably the one subject that will elicit a lot of comments or questions. So if you have any, please go ahead. Yes?
Yes. What about a vehicular receiver? Because I didn't see any example of a vehicular receiver for mobile, for the car. In terms of size, usability, price, size, and so on. Because we have seen only example of a normal radio receiver, no? No for the car.
Yeah.
That is, I think, is very important user, no? Because it's growing the listening in mobile.
I would say just a quick word, and then I'll pass you on to, as I say, Michel, the chair of our commercial committee. I think you might have seen Starwaves, which was a sort of top-of-the-range mobile. There was this idea of having truckers going from Turkey up to Ireland and, you know, using that. It was expensive. It was good, but expensive. But you are right. You spotted something that is comes to everyone saying, well, if DRM is really giving you mobility, where is the receiver for the car? That's what you are asking. So I'm now turning to my colleague, to
okay. For the receiver car, you know, is the easiest exercise. So far, one of the big difficulty in a receiver is to solve the question of the power supply. In a car, you do not have this question, of course. And up to now, there are already two car receivers, one in Russia, I think, which is working, and another one which is scheduled to be launched, or to be ready at least, in the first quarter of next year. So this is on schedule. This has not been advertised or circulated publicly yet, but in DRM, we had this announcement in Erlangen during our last GA. And so it's on. Of course, it's very important, because as soon as we can get the right, you know, the right understanding of the car manufacturers, of course, it's a really powerful tool, link, to decrease the price of the chipset. Okay, so DRM car receiver are on the road, if I may say so.
Sort of on the road. Okay, any other question? Yes?
But then there will be something happening, and also DieWave presented at the DRM event at the IBC. They presented a plan that included an automotive receiver as
yes,
well.
Yes.
So something is happening.
The Sarapulsky, I mean, Rachel here can tell us more. We saw it recently in Moscow.
Yes, during the symposium in Moscow a month ago, both receivers, UniWave and Sarapulsky receiver, worked together in parallel, and the quality was the same for both receivers. No problems.
Quality was excellent. It was Voice of Russia, wasn't it, being beamed, so now we have all the plugs are here. You know, everyone has been mentioned. Okay, thank you. Any other question at this junction? Matthias, and then Jens. Yes.
Okay, just a question. It's very interesting what you've shown. What are the plan for DRM Plus receivers at the moment? Because as I understood also, the difficulty asking from some manufacturers was around the RF front end, so the first stage of the receiver for tuning to shortwave without having too much interference coming from the receiver itself. So it seems quite a challenge. But it looks that for DRM Plus, maybe it could be more easy, as already some receiver manufacturers cover, for example, frequency band 2, which is used for FM, so maybe it's just an adaptation of software. And do you have feedback on that, or do you have plans or already feedback from receiver manufacturers on DRM Plus?
All manufacturers are following this, but I think Michelle has something to say.
No, I think I'll turn to Jens. I hope you two didn't decide during the break to do a double act, did you? Okay, Jens.
Well, to answer your question, I mean, DRM Plus is new, it just has been standardized. As you've seen that chipset manufacturers are thinking about it, like the Blackfin platform from Analog Devices, and also the UniWave has in its plan that there will be DRM Plus integrated. Of course, currently they are still a little bit hesitant because they want to see what the market will be with DRM Plus and which countries will decide for DRM Plus. But then, from a technical point of view, it's not a very big thing to integrate it then, because you have the bandwidth. If you go to band 1, for example, you have the front end already available. If it's a digital front end for HD ready, for example, you can just reuse it and just have the decoding for DRM Plus available. But actually, I wanted to ask a question. What do you think about the mobile phones? I mean, we all know that there's first a generation that is very that likes, you know, a lot of fancy things like looking at the iPhone and things like that, and it's a very quick change in the generations. Like in the cars, that's more like 7 to 9 years that the receiver changes because someone changes the car not that often. But a mobile phone is changed probably every second or third year. Is there any ideas in going into that direction or marketing into that direction?
Yes, certainly. We are very strongly looking into the mobile manufacturers and their interest in DRM, and they are interested. And maybe Rooks can add a little bit.
Well, we are interested in anyone who is interested in DRM. As I said, we can't produce it. I think the mobile option is an obvious one, since this is the object of choice. There are more mobile phones than there are washing machines or whatever you want to call it, yes? But again, it is about the handset manufacturers making the business case, justifying it, doing it into the mobile, and it will come back again to content. Why would you pay extra if there is no extra distinguishing content? But, you know, it's a bit difficult talking about receivers because you are asking naturally. We make a presentation, you are asking us questions. I have here a colleague from Frontier Silicon. Will he tell me all his figures, all his plans? No, because this is commercially sensitive information. So it would be wrong from my side to say, yes, I know two mobile handset manufacturers working on DRM 30 and DRM Plus. We are trying to encourage everyone and to be that place where people can connect. But until public announcements are made, I don't think it is right or proper that we should discuss.
But is it true that DRM Plus could be used in portable devices much easily than any other system, probably? So I think that's why the mobile operators will be far more interested in DRM Plus, and that could be a very good connection. And they are, actually.
About the antenna, if you're thinking about that, I mean, most of the mobile phones and FM radio is already integrated across antenna and the headset.
Yeah.
If you talk about that, then it would be
easier. I'm talking about the spectrum also, something to do that with that.
Okay. Rochelle? Is there a Sarapulsky mobile phone?
No, not mobile phone. I only wanted to say that almost each mobile phone now has the option of FM radio, but very small percent of users listen FM radio through their mobile phones. Very small. It's about 10%, maybe even less. So I'm not sure that it's reasonable to have.
I think it is different from different markets. Like in London, where I'm in London, I don't see people listening to FM on their mobile phones. It's true.
I think more people listen through internet, through mobile phone, but not FM radio, but internet radio.
But that's what I'm trying to explain. But there are places where internet is not available easily, or is very expensive to access internet on the mobiles. And also, mobiles which allow you to access internet are more expensive. But having a FM tuner in the mobile is not very expensive. So for example, in India, the best-selling mobile phone costs $20. And then it has no camera, but leave alone anything else. But it has an FM player. And maximum listening of radio is happening through mobile phones, FM listening. Massive, and it's not true for India alone, it's the whole of South Asia at least. Everywhere you go, you'll find young people listening to FM on their mobile phones, and now mobile operators are giving new mobiles which have speakers, good, better quality speakers. So you make your friends listen to the FM as well, because FM is free, and it doesn't. The battery consumption is also not too much or whatever, so it's very popular.
Okay, let's let another manufacturer.
I'll just add to that mobile phone discussion that the challenge is FM costs less than a dollar to put into a phone. In fact, lots of semiconductor companies just bundle it with their Wi-Fi, their Bluetooth, and it's free to the mobile phone company. the mobile phone industry, by and large, it does vary from country to country.
Yes.
The operators subsidize that bill of materials so that the consumer thinks they get the phone for free or next to nothing, but in reality it's a $200, $300 product. There's zero incentive for any handset vendor to put an expensive technology. You saw the ADI figure there suggesting the e-bomb of whatever it was, $20.
Yeah.
And, you know, DAB is less than $10 e-bomb today, and FM is less than $1 e-bomb today. And I just can't see how Nokia could go to Vodafone and say, hey, we'd like to put this in there. And I go, yeah, sure, we'll pay for it. It's a long, long way away, in my view.
But everything in the end is a matter of volume, isn't it? FM wasn't that cheap when it first started.
Well, I think if you look at one of the interesting cases in history, it was DVB-T and then DVB-H in mobile phone, which was broadcast TV in the handset, and it failed royally, and lots of companies put lots and lots of dollars into it. So what happened in the end is people started to get video services over IP and over their 3G network. I suspect by the time that the bill of materials cost is solved, IP will be ubiquitous in the handset, and operators can make money out of that, and that's their networks. So I suspect they'll be more biased in one direction than the other.
Thank you. That's very interesting. Did you want to add?
Only to describe to you a bit about the real world. In the RDS, we have all experienced this. So we are now at 200 million plus RDS receivers made per year. Of the 200 million, I would think that 50% of them are made for the mobile phones. And in the RDS forum, we have one company that produces alone 100 million circuits per year. You see? How big is a circuit for FM radio and RDS decoder? 4 square millimeter silicon. That's all. That's very interesting for mobile phone and also for iPod Nano now. It is used there. And it costs really, as the colleague from Frontier Silicon said, less than a dollar. If you buy them in large quantities. But there is a market because there's a service available.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for this contribution. Is there any burning question on this subject anymore? Because if there isn't, I would like to thank Vinita, and I would also like to invite Mr. Sharad Sadhu to take over and go to the regulatory and part of our session, and I will probably move and let him take over from me. Thank you very much.
Let's start in that case. Ladies and gentlemen, I wish you a very good afternoon, and I hope that this session will be as interesting as the previous one, where there were so many questions. This session is on the technical and regulatory issues, and I'm sure that all of you are across to all those issues. The speakers, we have about five speakers, and they're all eminent speakers on the subject, and I happen to know personally most of them. Before we start the first presentation, I would like to say that there is considerable awareness of DRM technology in the world, especially in the Asia-Pacific. I'm not sure whether it is the same in Europe. I should expect that Europe will be better than Asia-Pacific, but it has so happened that in our part of the world, DRM is very well known, and of course now DRM is getting known now. So the problem is not awareness of the standard or the system or how it works. Now, in the Asia-Pacific region at the ABU where I work, we have had very close relationship with the DRM consortium. We were at the founding meeting of the consortium in China. And we have done several seminars and symposia to expose the technology as it developed and as it went into implementation. In addition, we did four field trials starting in 2004 and the last one in 2007, and you will hear more about it from our first speaker. And these trials were on simple 18 kilohertz digital radio, because our bandwidth available there for medium wave is 18 kilohertz. Then 18 kilohertz simulcast, 18 kilohertz full stereo, 26 megahertz local, and NVIS in 3 to 5 megahertz. Why I'm saying this is that there is total awareness about the standard and possibilities. So all we need to do is to take the next step to sort of bell the cat and get into the implementation mode. Now, in that area, I would believe that the DRM is placing emphasis on several aspects of the technology and its implementation. And of course, one of those is the availability of the transmission equipment, the high efficiency of the system, and power savings, or using low power, you save a lot of electricity and you save a lot of money. No multiplexer costs and associated problems. And what I think is needs to be pushed more, and I know Ruxandra keeps on pushing it, is that putting into place DRM is not the final goal. What is required is putting place into place services over DRM, DRM or DRM Plus, and that requires a new approach to content and also the new applications that DRM and DRM Plus afford to listeners. I'm sure you're all aware of all these issues, and it would be our endeavor to look into this issue along with the DRM consortium and see how we can assist them in this area. I'm just coming from an ITU meeting, and I think there are some technical issues which have to be addressed by your technical committee and those who are doing regulatory work. And those are that the PLT, power line transmissions or telecommunications, is now being bandied up to 200 megahertz. So this is certainly going to affect the reception of DRM in both the modes. And there is this new animal coming up called cognitive radio, which looks up at the spectrum and tries to find free channels and tries to transmit. That's going to provide a big challenge for reception of radio services. And of course, the short-range devices, which you're all aware of. I think these are particularly more important in the digital field, because the digital signals are weaker compared to analog signals for the same kind of reception. So the kind of impact that these new devices will have will be more in the digital area. Now, having said that, I would now like to invite the first speaker, Dr. Pablo Angura of the University of Basque, Spain, who is also the chairman of the 26 megahertz technical group, to make the first presentation. The topic he has is update on studies and field trials concerning DRM Plus. And I would like to briefly introduce Pablo, as I know him.
If you want, you can skip the presentation, because I'm going to talk.
Okay, I think that's very kind of you. Well, all I wanted to see is, I know Pablo very well. We worked together in New Delhi in the month of May at 45 degrees temperature and did some of the trials together, and I have learned a lot from him how he goes about his work. Pablo, the floor is yours.
So today, Jens, with my colleague Jens from RF Mondial. And I would like to be brief so I can leave room for the newest technology, which is DRM Plus. And probably many of the topics that I'm going to talk about, most of you are also already aware of. And I would like my presentation to be a kind of a hook, so if you have some specific technical detail, you can go to the literature that I have mentioned on the slides, and you can, any of you can email me. You can get into the FTP server of the consortium, so everything is there. So my presentation could be just three slides. A summary review of activities between 2004 and 2009. So we've done quite a lot of work. A lot of work has been done in medium wave and in 26 megahertz band, starting from trials in Madrid with Radio Nacional, in Mexico, in the UK led by BBC, in New Delhi. Cheryl has mentioned that. Again, colleagues from Italy, and then in Madrid also with Cadena Ser last year, and now today we are doing some work in our area in Bilbao. And if you go to the 26 megahertz band, also a lot of work has been done by Professor Lauterbach from Nuremberg. This is the Dilleber field trial. Also in Mexico, we tested the first big test in 26 megahertz band. In Brasilia, in New Delhi again, and in Italy, led by Mr. Claudio Re. So the message is the technology below 30 megahertz has been tested very deeply, during a long time, and probably we have already covered most of the situations that you could expect for your coverage. So my conclusions could be that DRM has shown available practical planning data for most of the broadcasting scenarios. So below 30 megahertz is ready to use it. But as I was scheduled to speak for 20 minutes, I know. So I'm going to give a little bit of details on 26 megahertz band and the medium wave. So regarding 26 megahertz band, I'm going to coverage prediction, planning parameters, ionospheric interference issues, and noise studies. And again, I'm going to try to outline small ideas and then so to encourage you to find more information on the web. With respect to coverage prediction, we are doing now work evaluating different prediction algorithms. We have tested most of the most frequent planning algorithms based on lots of empirical data we have from Mexico, India, Brazil, and Germany also. And the conclusion is that no model outperforms in all situations, but the best candidate, the best one, so far is 1546, ITU recommendations 1546, and we are not working in adapting it to the use in 26 megahertz band, especially with respect to clearance angle, elevation, and terrain profiles. The last issue we are tackling is for close coverage, and this has been the last test in Germany with Professor Lauterbach, is to consider the ground wave. We expect not to have a ground wave, but it seems that there's some ground wave close to the transmitter. Here in this slide, you have some old results from Mexico and Brazil. This is the mode that probably most of you will be using, which delivers 22 kilobits per second, and it gives a very good behavior if you have around 40 dB microvolts per meter. The coverage target with these modes is going to be close to 15 kilometers. This is a rule of thumb number that you could use to have an idea of the size of your network. These are real data from Brasilia. And this is all with respect to coverage issues. Now, the work with interference issues. I mean, there's a concern that could be interference in this band, and the problem is that today, this year, we do not have ionospheric propagation because we are at the lowest level of sunspot numbers almost in history. So it is not possible to make reliable measurements to prove this. So what we did is we set up a simulation of five transmitters all over Europe and calculate the field strength that these transmitters produce at every kilometer in the whole map of Europe. So what we did is set up these parameters and evaluate the field strength receiver at, received at every spot of Europe from these five transmitters, from sunspot number from zero ranging to 200, so we covered the whole 11-year cycle, also for each season of the year and for each hour of each day of the year. So there's a vast amount of data here, and I would summarize that if we have sunspot numbers less than 50, we are going to have ionospheric propagation. We cannot avoid that, and this is in line with Claudio this morning was speaking. You are going to have ionospheric propagation, but not necessarily a potential harmful interference for your service. You are going to have a reduced coverage in the peak of the sun activity during the 11-year cycle. Right? There's a reference later that you can have more information about this. With respect to noise, here in this table you have a very comprehensive list of measurements that they have been done in Germany, Brasilia, in Mexico also. And there's a comparison here with the ITU values. And the conclusion from the measurements is that the noise is very variable from place to place. And we have places where you have 10 dBs more than ITU noise recommendation value, and other places where you could still apply this recommendation. So in the city, you have all these references. You can get them, and if you do not have access to them, just send me an email, and I will send them to you. So this is with respect to 26 megahertz band. Now, with respect to the medium wave, I have results for 20 kilohertz simulcast, some results for urban coverage, indoor reception, and noise. With respect to the simulcast concept, I think that almost everyone knows it here. I'm referring always to 20 kilohertz or 18 kilohertz simulcast, depending on the ITU region. And these are the modes that more likely you are going to apply if you use your simulcast, which is 64, 16, and 05 or 06. And these were the modes that we tested in Madrid and in Mexico. And the backup ratio between the analog and the digital signal is being assumed to be 16 dB. We tried extensively in Madrid, varying with our colleagues from Transradio, varying the ratio between analog and digital signals with different families of receivers. And you could see that high-end receivers have good reception even with 3 or 9 dBs backoff between the analog and the digital. But mid-range receivers will depend on the model, will need 12 to 16 dBs. And if you take low-end receivers, you need to apply 16 dBs of backoff. And even in that case, there's some very cheap receiver that would be still have some annoyance on the analog part. With respect to the urban coverage, this is going to be an issue when you plan your medium wave network in the city. These are real measurements from Madrid. This is the field trial we did with Cadena Solar in 2008. The transmitter was placed outside the city, in 14 kilometers from downtown. And you see the evolution of the field strength in the suburbs that follows quite well the ITU prediction. And when you enter downtown, you see the other variation. So the low conductivity and small street, narrow streets and big buildings are going to attenuate the signal. But so what can you do in front of that? This is another example of fading cost by urban environment. So what can you do is to try to get a lower frequency to plan your cities. This is another test we did in Madrid, comparing the power received in 800 kilohertz and on the 1.3 megahertz. So you almost have a 10 dB difference between these two frequencies. It depends on the case, it depends on the street, but you, and as an average, you have the data over there, depending on the type of environment, from 12 to 9 dBs of difference between these two frequencies. So if you are able to get a license for a lower frequency in that city, this is going to improve very much your coverage, very much. Currently, we are working on a tool to predict coverage based on all the empirical data we have to predict coverage in urban environments. So this is some of the results we are having now for different attenuation factors. With respect to indoor reception, work still continues. We did in 2007 a test in Madrid, around 100 measurement locations. And the message here is that noise indoors is very, very high. It's much higher than the ITU prediction. So you are going to have buildings where the noise is almost is going to almost block anything in the medium wave. So you also cannot avoid that. It's also in analog. By the way, there's a building here when you see that no correct location was able to be decoded, and the broadcaster was quite annoyed because of that. But we tested the AM reception of any broadcaster in this building and was zero. I mean, DRM didn't work, but broadcasters assumed that AM analog works. It didn't work in this building. So this is something that we have to assume because of the medium wave band. But in any case, this was 10 kilowatts for Madrid. What happened if we had twice the power? The percentage of locations increases a lot, because 10 kilowatts is quite a reduced power for a city like Madrid. Currently, with respect to indoor, we are now doing measurements in Spain, in Bilbao, and in Vitoria-Gasteiz, another city close to Bilbao. And we are measuring the building penetration loss in different frequencies on the band. We will present these documents to the ITU probably on the next meeting, so all this data will be available. And finally, I'm going to finish with this. We are also doing measurements on noise, also in these two cities, with different frequencies of the medium wave band. And what we are finding is that in urban environments, we should not use any longer the ITU recommendation on radio noise for medium wave. I mean, the numbers have changed a lot from the 60s. The experimental data that was backing the ITU recommendations was from the 60s. And, I mean, maybe it is a time to try to look for a reviewed version of this recommendation. So, as a conclusion, I can go again to the conclusions slide. DRM has been tested extensively below 30 megahertz. There is available practical data for most of the broadcasting scenarios. If you look at what we are working currently now, they are the small details of the planning. The big numbers are already available. So the DRM technology is ready. You can use it. So I'm finished with that.
Thank you very much,
we'll be
Pablo.
Happy to answer any
Let's give him a hand. That was an excellent presentation. Of course, a lot of data is available, which is subsumed in your presentation, and I'm sure that people will like to get the data when it is available. We have about 5 minutes for asking some questions to Dr. Pablo. And I would first like to ask him, you told us about the testing and the figures.
Yeah.
Now, what is your punchline? What is the main message on both 26 megahertz and, of course, DRM plus, if you have done any work, but at least on 26 megahertz and in the medium wave band? You told us it is ready, you should do. But what is really the punch line in this whole? What is your assessment?
My assessment in these two bands, is again, I think I'm repeating myself too much, is that the technology is ready because we have tested it for, and I've done just like 28 slides or something like that, and there has been, if you put it one day after the other, probably around 2 years of continuous testing. If you take different measurement campaigns, different testing, so almost every situation that you could expect for your real network planning in your scenario, we have tested it. I mean, the data is available. If your noise is, if your city is very noisy, then you have Mexico. If your city is flat and with low rise buildings, then you have the deliberate trial. If you have a very dense urban environment, you have the Madrid trial. If you have a very in extension a very big city, you have the New Delhi example. So, if you go to the ITU documents, because by the way, the EBU, the Durham Consortium, all these data have been submitted to the ITU working party. So all these documents, probably any of you in this room can access this data. So the only thing you have to do is to go and download the document, because all this experimental data is there. And I mean, I think that very few standards have been tested so much.
Thank you, Pablo. I will second that in this way, that we have made excellent tests, especially Pablo and his university have done a very good work, and I have to say thank you for this from the DRM as well. So, and I will second that in this way, that we all from the consortium and also you all sitting here have to recognize that there are lots of measurements available. The most of it, as Pablo said, is published in the ITU. And I warn before self-made DRM tests with probably wrong results. And often we have customers interested in DRM tests, not properly conducted, and then we get the wrong results out of it. So we have to draw the attention of the potential customers on the tests. They were already done. And after that, if they cannot find the really right results, then they can do their own tests. But these tests are pretty good. And as Pablo said, we have done the tests in all environmental conditions and also under all possible modes. So everything is available. Thank you.
I think that's a very good point and a very important one. And I would think that the DRM consortium would pass that message across to all the members and those who will need the test results. Any other question, Dr. Pablo? Yeah, please.
The testing medium wave was made with magnetic antenna receivers or electric antenna receivers, because there are standard, but the real situation is on a car we typically have an electrical antenna receiver, and in a kitchen receiver we have a magnetic field antenna.
We had three different types of antennas in most of the text on the tests. We always use an electric one, the calibrated Rodian Schwarz, which sometimes has problems because of the active part of the antenna. But we also used a loop, a magnetic loop, in those places where we had noise problems, especially. And also we had an helicoidal magnetically coupled antenna, the third one. So I think that with this respect, there's always been a concern because antennas are very tricky in the medium wave band. But there's also a wide range of measurements available for different types of antennas. So with this respect also, there's data available. Yeah, but you're right. You have very different behavior depending on the antenna. And I would say that in many cases, what we have provided is the worst case, because the magnetic antenna will have better performance.
We have time for one last question, if there is one. At the back. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike Haight, BBC World Service. Probably a very simple one. You said that this was 10 kilowatts you were using to cover the city. Is that 10 kilowatts of DRM, or is that a 10 kilowatt analog transmitter adapted to do DRM?
No, it was 10 kilowatt DRM, because the transmitter, I cannot remember exactly, was 25, yeah, something like that.
Pablo, thank you very much for this presentation, and I think it has brought out some very important points. I'm not going to repeat those. But I do hope that you keep on struggling with the tests that you have been doing. I know what kind of a struggle you go through, and keep the DRM sort of informed of what the results are, which are always very good.
Sure. I mean, our colleague, David Guerra, he was, I would say, that almost some days representing DRM in the ITU working parties, because we were presenting other documents there with respect to wind turbines and things like that. But we also were presenting DRM documents and supporting the documents sent by the consortium there. So we'll be fighting there.
Thank you very much, and please step down and take your seat. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
The next presenter on the same similar topic is Dr. Jens Schroeder, and he's here. I will briefly introduce him if he pleases. Jens is founder and CEO of RF Mondial in Hanover, Germany, and which offers professional products and services for DRM and DRM Plus broadcasters. He has received diplomas in management and electrical engineering.
Thank you, Sean.
And he is going to talk to us briefly about DRM and DRM Plus trials in Hanover, local coverage, DRM Plus test in Band 3, and DRM Plus demonstrator, which also probably is available somewhere here. Hence, the field is yours.
Thank you, Sharad. Actually, I'm talking about the trials in Hanover, but I'm also talking a little bit about the work of Kaiserslautern, of Professor Steil and his group, because he has done a lot of significant work in the field of DRM+. And so I have a couple of slides which shows his results. As I said, the contribution from Hanover and Kaiserslautern, some ideas about Band 3, then some field trials result, a little bit about the system status evaluation of DRM+, and then about the availability of DRM+ transmitter and receiver equipment. The contributions in Hanover started with DRM since 2001. There was work in the DRM field, basically working on the standard, but then also for local coverage, field strength measurements, mobile and long-term measurements, and also some skywave propagation simulations. Then the work went on to DRM+. So the worldwide first DRM+ transmission was in 2007. And from that, there was developed basically real-time DRM+ transmitter and receiver setup. There were compatibility tests with FM radio, aircraft, and emergency services done, and protection ratio measurements for FM disturbed by DRM+. And Albert Wahl is the system evaluation group lead for DRM+. Yeah, there were also some work, as Pablo has shown, for DRM for the prediction applicability of the ITU P1546. In DRM+, currently the work is going on. We have a project together with a regional radio broadcaster, two private broadcasters, and the company Bosch. We want to test transmit delay diversity and single frequency network in DRM+, and of course mobile reception coverage measurements. But what I think is the most important case, that we have these two private broadcasters in there, and they will think about the business case and also about content implementation as you know, the situation in Germany is, I don't know, as complicated as in France, or but it is also very complicated. So that's a good point that we have the private broadcasters in there, that they think, start at least thinking about a little bit doing digital radio. We'll also do a field test in band 3. We are going on with a cross-compliant test of transmitter and receiver hardware, which is available. And there's a DRM Plus demonstrator, which you also can see outside, which has traveled around the world for showing the capabilities of DRM Plus. Going now to the to some slides from the from Kaiserslautern, from Professor Stey. He did intensive work for compatibility issues, so also working with emergency services, aeronautical services, and especially looking at the situation in the band 2. And his outcome, and also the odds that DRM Plus can be operated within the band without harming existing FM systems, and it can be planned relying on legal planning procedures. Looking at the coverage, that there is a higher coverage and the coverage reliability when you take the same power compared to FM, and it's by far more resistant to DRM Plus and FM interference. So it shows a good, a better, stable mobile reception. And of course, you can, for the single frequency networks, they did a network planning exercise, and you obviously can show that it can be applicable in band 2. Some ideas about band 3. First of all, I need to say DRM is not standardized for band 3. So it's standardized up to 174 megahertz. But there were a couple of voices, which are getting louder, also in Germany, who say we have band 3, which is assigned to digital sound broadcasting. But with DAB, we have the problem, as discussed from France, we have a problem to bring in the local and the regional coverages, so the small radio broadcasters. So why can we not have the DRM Plus in band 3, for example, and just share the spectrum up there? And the advantage is obvious. As we have heard this morning, most of the services and also the audio codec of the DAB Plus is the same, or are almost the same in the DRM family and in the DAB family. So once a receiver has, or receiver manufacturers implemented all these features, they can be used from both sides, and the same to the broadcasters. So it could be an idea to put it into band 3. Professor Stey had, this is just an example, you can just take one block where you put, if you have a 200 kilohertz spacing, for example, you could have 7 to 8 DRM Plus blocks in there. If you want to even make the spacing lower, you could even put more blocks in there. And probably for Germany, it would be enough if you have, let's say, 10 to 12 DRM Plus blocks for cover whole, the whole Germany for the local coverage. Coming on back to some trials that have been done in Hanover. This is the simulation for the feed strength, as you probably know. And for the FM reception, for a good FM reception, you need up to, let's say 50 dB microvolt per meter. So you have this smaller coverage. And depending on the mode that you choose from DRM Plus, you need either from 10 dB microvolt per meter for the lowest mode in DRM Plus up to 35 dB microvolts per meter for the highest mode, which gives you 186 kilobits per second. And looking at that, from side view, you have the distance here and the dB microvolt per meter there. You can see that you can increase the coverage with the DRM Plus. And additionally, it has been shown that the ITU recommendations fit quite well to the measurements. Coming now to the system evaluation of DRM Plus, there has been a lot of cross-compliance tests for baseband so that the existing receiver and transmitter implementations work together. All the companies listed up there have been working on that. There has been field tests with low power, so below 100 watts, in Hanover and Kaiserslautern. with the main results. As I said already, the coverage and coverage reliability is increased compared to FM, and there's no impact on other systems, especially the flight security and emergency services had problems on that. And it is a higher resistance to interference. Currently, there's a group working in Germany on network planning recommendations for DRM+. And as Vinita said, the update of the DRM broadcaster user manual will include also the DRM+. Let's have a look, a short look in the field. So there is a lot of interest in DRM+. Of course, there has not been 7 years of testing as Pablo had shown for DRM because the standard was just standardized this year. But next to Germany, there was already the field trial in band one, as we have seen before. There's another one planned in band two. Italy is also looking into preparing a field trial for band one and band two, and also want to look into the combined mode. As we heard from Brazil, there's currently going on DRM test, and there will be, beginning next year, DRM plus testing. And there's a lot of other countries there working on their digital strategy, as we have heard from India this morning, or from Russia, or from China. So we hope that there will be more testing, because the people have obviously recognized that it can be a good solution for their country. Receiver side, Vinita has pointed out that is one of the problems. There has, of course, been prototype receivers on the way. There's a measurement receiver that we offer from our side, but there is not yet any real hardware solution that you would call a consumer receiver. We heard from Analog Devices that they are working on a solution. The UniWave has announced it, but there is no receiver currently, no consumer receiver currently available for that. There's source code available for licensing for chipset manufacturers if they're interested. Transmitter side is, let's say, a little bit easier because there's has been developed developments for band 2 for the HD radio, and these transmitters are applicable to DRM+. So there can be from, for example, from Nautel, can buy the system, their NV line, you can buy the system up to 44 kilowatts, capable of DRM+, and other transmitter manufacturers are also looking into that solution because they have the transmitter ready, and there's no huge adaptation necessary for having the equipment, the HD equipment, ready for DRM+. If there will be the case for band 3, of course, there's also equipment available for the from the DAB side. So my conclusion is similar to the one from Pablo. The standardization is finished, the system evaluation is finished, and test systems are available. So I can encourage everyone to look into the system because it is a nice solution and can be a good solution for your country. And you're also welcome to the DRM Plus demonstration that we have outside to see the features. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian, and you kept it short and sweet, and I think there's a lot of information available there. Are there any questions?
For the planning exercises that you made in Band 2, did you establish already protection ratio curves that one would eventually need, an ITU environment?
Yeah,
agree on international level these curves so that all people make the same kind of planning exercises.
Yeah. Kaiserslautern has done a lot of work on that, and on their website the measurements are available. And as I said, the network planning parameters for Germany, there's a group currently working on that, and I don't know if there's a publishing date for that already available, but it is advanced. It's not ready yet. The next meeting is in December, so it's currently worked on.
Maria, you had a question?
Yeah, thanks. I might have misunderstood what you're saying, but you're talking about an aircraft security issue, and I wasn't very clear whether that was applicable to Band 3 or whether you're talking about the upper edge of Band 2.
No, I'm talking about Band 2.
Oh, okay. Right.
Band 2. Band 3, there's no problem.
Thank you. Swedish Regulatory Agency. I have three questions. somewhere I read about these tests before, and it was said that if I want to plan for a DRM and if I want to use existing frequency assignment or frequency allocation, then I should reduce power with 7 dB. Is it correct? If I want to do that for test purposes, for example, if I have a frequency allocation and I reduce power with 7 dB, and then it will be fine. I read it some time ago. I wonder if you have some other figures. Question number two.
You're talking about FM allocations, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, DRM plus and FM. Question number two. You said that there is no impact of DRM plus to the aircraft navigation. Does it mean that we do not have to have a consideration at all in the future if we are going over to DRM plus? Or we... There is some consideration.
The measurements that have been done together with the aircraft at the places that have been done, there was no impact.
No impact at all.
However, I mean, as you know, when you would do your planning, you obviously would include the aircraft services to have their views on that. And currently in Germany, there is the aircraft navigation is looking into this issue and is. Every time when you want to have a test license, they always are looking critical into that.
But it's not but more no critical than...
It has not been proven on in measurements that there is an impact on that.
Okay.
It's more a feeling issue. I mean, everybody from us would
so it's not more
do not
critical
want to
than
have the flight security have a problem.
Thank you. And a third question?
Before you ask the third one, ma'am, I would like to get back to this aircraft radio navigation service. This probably is the result of a test that has been taken. But this has to be verified by many other countries. And finally, this will be decided upon at the ITU. That is the final place where it will rest. So as of now, this is one contribution saying that there is no problem. We don't know. So we'll have to look at other contributions. And maybe Jeff can tell us later on when he speaks to us on this issue briefly. So the final word has not been said about any problem in the radio navigation for the aeronautical service. I just wanted to clarify that. Yeah.
Thank you. And a third question? Is it okay? When you were talking about band 3 and DRM plus, we have already heard about streams, data, technique. Do we have same number of or same possibilities in band 3 as we have in band 2 when talking about 3 audio and 1 data, etc.? So it's the same technique.
To answer the important point is there is no DRM standard currently for band 3. So these are just ideas because we have seen that in Germany the FM band is completely filled up. It will be very difficult to introduce a digital system in the FM band. But the band 3 is allocated for audio broadcasting. And DAB will be a good solution for the huge area coverages and for the coverage for the whole country. But for the local coverage, it is not a solution. And therefore, it could be an idea to use DRM Plus. But then, one idea would be, as has been shown here, that we take the same bandwidth, so the 100 kilohertz bandwidth, and just put these bandwidth to a higher frequency. And then, of course, you would have the same services and bitrate variations as here. But this is not standardized yet. So, not standardized, sorry. Sorry.
Jens, I think this is a very important question, actually. And The next question would be why there is no standard for band 3. I had somebody stopped and say, no, look at band 2. And I think our friend Lindsay is in a better position to answer that when he has time. But I suggest that the DRM look at it and why they are not getting into band 3. Are they scared of somebody else? Or somebody has stopped the frequency spectrum at 174 and so on and so forth. But I think the main issue here is, which the Swedish lady has pointed out, that if you go to a higher band, to be more efficient, you can use more bandwidth with the same parameters. So
if you can use 1.5 megahertz, yeah, then you have DAB.
So that's really she wants you to explore. And thank you very much. One last question at the back, please.
Yes, this is an interesting question that I have here. Is if we compare DAB plus in one channel, we can accommodate there, I don't know, 15 programs?
Depending, yeah, approximately.
Around the sum. And now if you use this for DRM plus, I have the impression you can accommodate more programs or not. No? Yes or no?
As I understand, the audio codec is exactly the same. So from a audio efficiency, it should be the same, right? Because the audio codec is the same.
The audio codec is in both cases the same.
The problem is the spectrum that you occupy is, let's say, with the 15 programs in DAB+, you occupy the complete 1.5 megahertz.
If you would have a 100 GHz spacing.
Now, I don't know what kind of spacing you use for your DRM trial, but you occupy only 100 kilohertz, no? Mm-hmm. So I think you can then put in there, I don't know, 7 or every second channel, or I don't know how many carriers you put in.
I think Albert wants to say something in this.
On each one, you can put 4 services, I understood this morning. So you multiply 7 by 4, 28 programs.
Albert, do you want to say something on this?
Some clarifications. DRM Plus is not the concurrent system to DRB, because if you use DRB at 1.536 megahertz, it's very efficient. It's very efficient system. But the problem is, if you have big multiplex, it's no possibility to bring all private broadcasters in this multiplex, because they have the same coverage array, the same transmitter, the same antenna. It's not option for private broadcasters. You won't use only part of this spectrum, and then you have one program, one frequency, and one multiplex. Of course, you can transmit up to 4 services in DRM+, but it's not needed. They mentioned to use DRM+ in band 3, it's not to use more program, it's to use less program than DRB, because it's more spectrum efficiency.
One last question, we are running out of time.
Okay. Matthias Quanchon from EBU again. I think DRM+ is a very good candidate system, to be honest, for an alternative to HD radio in Europe, because as you know, HD radio is trying to enter Europe, which we are not very keen in EBU for that, because it's not standardized, it's not compatible with the FM planning in Europe. It's also very expensive in terms of licensing, but they have this hybrid mode, and also we see an interest for non-multiplex approach, as we have already discussed, for small EBU members that don't have a set of programs to broadcast. So, with this regard, have you studied also HD radio, and have you compared the performance of HD radio compared to DRM Plus, and also do you have a hybrid scenario possible also with DRM Plus?
Do you want to
the last question?
Yes, of course, we have studied HD. We have compared all digital systems for band 1, band 2, and band 3. Including HD radio. The main problem of HD radio is very good system for migration from analog to digital. But the problem of HD radio that's have analog spectrum and digital part and the same program in hybrid mode. It's not really spectrum efficiency in this case.
Okay, Jens, a short answer from you.
This was not the question. The question was, have you compared also in terms of performance? I mean, and do you have a hybrid scenario possible also with DRM Plus?
Yeah, of course we have. Compared, and I will remind you that DRM Plus have the same better possibilities to introduce combined mode you can place the digital part of DRM plus signal left or right of FM signal with the same content or with the different content. The DRM plus is more flexible system than the G radio, and that can more than HD radio.
Okay. Albert, can I also sort of ask a very simple question? We've discussed all this. It is like going back and saying, what is DRM? But I understand that HD radio is presenting itself as an easier mode to introduce because it doesn't affect the planning that is already in place for analog. I sort of have the answer, but I would like to have a comprehensive and direct answer, because this is, in a sense, it's all about benefits and how it fits. And we have a lot of regulators here. So if a regulator hears, oh, to introduce DRM or DAB or DMB, I have to look at the whole planning, that's a big issue. If somebody comes and says, you can become digital without even touching anything, that's a great advantage. So can you answer this in simple language? Because this is very, very important, I think.
On every presentation of HD radio, one of the sentences, you don't need additional spectrum. It's in every presentation of HD radio. And it's not really right. It's it's wrong. Of course, you need additional bandwidth. You need about 140 kilohertz of spectrum. You don't need additional spectrum planning if you can place more HD radios, but it's not possible in Europe. It's not possible in many countries in the world. It's only possible in the USA. Be careful with this sense.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I think we had a free-for-all, and I hope that we can have a controlled discussion now. Thank you very much, and let me make a last suggestion to the management here. All this information is available in ITU documents, but you know ITU documents are very verbose and they say so many things. Is it possible for you, and if you think it is necessary and essential, to take this information out and produce a short handbook, or you already have a handbook, and so that the suggestion here is that whenever a customer wants a test, we just refer it to that manual or that handbook.
Well, we've mentioned the broadcaster's user manual. You've got the executive summary on your desk, and you'll get the answers. But maybe what Sharad you are referring to is very simple questions and answers, and maybe that is something that we could take away and think about.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I am rushing you through. We have one presentation before the tea break, and that is on ITU activities with regard to 26 megahertz and modification to the ITU recommendation to recognize DRM+. The presenter is Jeff Spells. I don't think he needs to be introduced in this forum. Do you, Jeff? I have known him for years. You may not like to even mention about this, about 20 years. And he is very well known in the DRM as well as in the ITU. Jeff is an ex-BBC, and then he was also working in VT Merlin, where he was a shareholder. I hope he still is. And he's very well known in the industry. Jeff is going to tell us about DRM Plus, its status in the inclusion in BS1114, studies in 26 megahertz at the ITU for local broadcasting, and issues connected with 18/20 kilohertz channel bandwidth. So, Jeff, you have the floor, and around 10, 12 minutes. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Sharad. I've been involved in the international regulatory and technical work within ITU for well over 20 years. And last year I was appointed as vice chairman of ITUR Working Party 6A. So that's the reason I'm here, is to give you an overview of what's happening in ITUR, in Working Party 6A, in terms of DRM. What I'm going to do is to go through what's happened with DRM Plus, and also look at the DRM 30, the below 30 megs part, because although all of the documentation has been there for some time, there are some enhancements that are required. And then I'm going to identify some other documents that are useful to people looking to implement DRM. and finally looking at what other work needs to be done. So first of all, DRM Plus. The ITU currently have recommendation ITU RBS 1114, and that's systems for terrestrial digital sound broadcasting in the frequency range 30 to 300, 3000 megahertz. It's got three different systems recommended. Digital system A is the Eureka 147 system. Digital system C is in the recommendation, it's IBOC in band on channel, but that's now HD radio. And we have digital system F, ISDBT. Now, there were other systems in the preparation of the recommendation, which is why there are gaps in the lettering, because some fell by the wayside. At the last ITUR Working Party 6A meeting, which was held 4th to 12th of November, there was an input paper from the DRM consortium that proposed a modification to this recommendation to add digital system G, which is DRM Plus. Now, that work was done in the drafting group, and it went through, but one administration stopped it from going forward because they felt that there was not enough test data to support the inclusion of DRM Plus at this stage. So that's gone back to the working party to be reconsidered, and it will depend on input to ITUR whether that gets approved in the April 2010 meeting. One thing I will say is I don't think you really need to guess which administration objected to DRM Plus. I'm not going to say who, but I think you can guess. Okay, now if we go to DRM in the VHF band, the EBU put in a document 6A240, which you can pick up from the ITU website, and it described the opportunities for sound broadcasting digital in the VHF band. It noted that both DRM Plus and DRM30 have been tested, and it also identified the situation in the VHF band 1 in region 1. It's very complicated, so there's a big set of information there as to the options that exist. This was accepted by the working party. It's been prepared as a temporary document, which is attached to the chairman's report for further consideration at the next meeting. Again, I've given you the document number there, so you can pick it off from the ITU website. It will be an attachment to the chairman's report, but that chairman's report isn't yet available. Now, if you'd move to DRM30 and looking at the idea of 26 megahertz broadcasting, a new draft report was prepared from different documents, one contribution from Italy, one from the EBU, and one from the DRM consortium. Some of the material you've already seen here today. As it was said in the presentation before, a lot of the information was presented to the ITU for inclusion in reports and recommendations, etc. So we now have this document. Again, it will be attached to the chairman's report for further consideration at the next block meeting. But it's worth pointing out that there is a question in ITUR which is called mitigation techniques required for the use of digital modulation in the 26 megahertz broadcasting band for local coverage. Now that question is still outstanding. A lot more information needs to be presented with the idea that you end up with a recommendation identifying how to use the 26 megahertz band for local broadcasting. So again, there's a lot of information in the report. We need a bit more so that we can then draw the conclusions out and prepare a new recommendation. Again, looking at DRM 30, ITUR recommendation BS1514 recommends digital systems for sound broadcasting below 30 megahertz. It includes DRM, DRM30, and also IBOC for medium wave only. It was prepared some time ago, 10 years ago, something like that, and the revision was to try to expand the recommends to invite receiver manufacturers to develop multi-band, multi-standard receivers capable of receiving all digital radio broadcasting systems. Now, that went beyond what is currently in recommendation 1514, which is below 30 megahertz. So again, it didn't get approved at study group 6, and it's returned to working party 6A for further consideration. A lot of the emphasis on inviting receiver manufacturers, it's a good idea, but perhaps it wasn't quite right to do it in 1514. At least you could put some of it there, but not everything that was added. So again, we have to go back to that to do further work. Now, one of the other problems we have is that back in, I think it was 2001, ITUR BS1615 was prepared, which has the planning parameters for digital broadcasting below 30 megahertz. But it only includes up to 10 kilohertz bandwidth. It's got Lundy 4.5, 9, and 10 kilohertz bandwidth modes. But as we've already heard, there is a need to include the 18 and 20 kilohertz modes of DRM. These modes have been tested and have proven to be beneficial, but we do not have planning parameters for them. Now, within the EBU, there's a project team called SDIP that's been looking at this with an idea of contributing to this work in ITUR. One of the issues we found is that the original calculation method that was used to prepare 1615 is no longer available. So one of the things that was thought was to go back to the original tables that were prepared in the original ITUR task group, which included these modes, and then modify those wider bandwidth modes, taking into account the change in the spectrum masks in the transmitter mask. There was a change to that after the original tables were developed. This document is available, and the idea is to try to get administrations, sector members, to look at this methodology to see if it's appropriate and to come up with new tables that could be added to 1615 as soon as possible. The other ITU documentation that exists at the meeting back in April, May this year, a new report was approved, and its planning parameters and coverage for DRM at frequencies below 30 megahertz. Now, this report is still being processed within the ITU, so it's not currently available as a report on the ITU website, but it is available as document 6142. I think there were some minor modifications made to it, but you can see the contents and you've got all of the material in that document, which is available if you wanted to look at it now. It has a lot of the information that you saw presented here today. As was said, a lot of contributions to ITUR have been on all of the tests that are being conducted, all the trials. This has all been collected into a report that's available for people interested in implementing DRM. The other document, which I think is appropriate to mention, is a circular letter CCRR20, and it gives the results of a special study that was undertaken looking at implementation of digital systems in the LFMF bands. And it proposes new rules of procedure. Now, that study concluded that it was possible to implement DRM in the MF plan in the Geneva 75 plan in regions 1 and 3, provided the power was reduced by 7 dB, which is where the 7 dB comes from, compared to the equivalent analog. So the rules of procedure allow DRM to be implemented within the plan. So what further work do we need? Well, the main thing for DRM Plus is to get the information on all of the tests and trials on DRM Plus into the ITU with a view to either preparing a new report on DRM Plus or expanding the existing report to take it to cover the whole of the DRM family, DRM 30 and DRM Plus. That would then allow further consideration of getting DRM Plus included into the recommendation 1114. What we also need are planning parameters for DRM Plus, because as somebody's already said, we need planning parameters to be able to plan the service. So we do need those. So as we've heard, some exist. I would recommend that they are put into ITUR so that we can at least start on that process. We also need to think about what other information is needed to progress the studies on DRM in the band 1. So there's quite a lot of things we need to consider before April. For DRM 30, we need to look at trying to come up with more information on the 26 megahertz for local broadcasting in response to the question, so that we can enhance the draft new report that we currently have. The protection ratios for the wider bandwidth modes is quite a big task. It needs to be done, because as we move forward and people start to implement the wider bandwidth modes, we need the data so that we can plan adequately. We also have to go back through the regulatory side to see what else we need in terms of rules of procedure to allow the wider bandwidth modes to be implemented in the MF band. And then we need to reconsider the proposed amendment to recommendation 1514 in terms of inviting receiver manufacturers, etc. So that's the work that's required. Again, there's a lot there. There's a lot going on. I would urge anyone that's involved in DRM who has information to submit it to the ITUR so that we can actually further this work as quickly as possible. One of the things I didn't put in here but's worth mentioning is this aeronautical compatibility issue for DRM Plus. It is an agenda item for the next World Radio Conference. I think it's agenda item 1.4, and it's really the compatibility of the broadcasting in the band 2 against the aeronautical services above 108 megahertz. So it is an issue. There's work currently being done, and I believe Study Group 5 that's meeting down in the ITU is discussing that issue this week. So that's it.
Thanks, Jeff. The regulatory work is always very complicated and involved, and I think you have put it in very simple terms for us. Any questions to Jeff on these issues? Lindsay.
It's not really a question, it's just a comment, which is to Jeff's request to anybody working on DRM to forward to the ITU. I would urge you to send that information to me to coordinate it on behalf of the consortium, I'd be very, very pleased to hear to get that information to make sure that we present it into the ITU in the right way and at the right time. Thank you.
I think that's very important that it should be presented in the right time and at the right way, and the best way to be done is through Lindsay. Any other question? Clearly, there's a lot of information required by ITU, and Jeff has said that unless that is put in good time, there may be some negative consequences. So I think the DRM has to work very hard, including Lindsay and his group. Any other question, please? I see none, so thank you very much, and we will now have a short break for tea. Can we come back in 15 minutes' time, which is about 10 minutes to 5? We were running a bit late. So thank you very much.
This small EVE video, is it possible to share this one? Ranga Yorkshire Akhilat as well. This one, so this can be played with sound. Ah, okay. So we can resize it a little bit.
Yes, I don't hear any sound. No, it should be okay because we heard the video, you know, the other video.
Ah, yes, but the sound is inside. No,
but